Well, when you hear the phrase crystal skulls, crop formations, other planetary mysteries, you'll turn to Chet Snow. Mass Dreams of the Future, he wrote this book a long time ago, but still, it is perplexing, and still, it makes you wonder, just which way are we going, a global awakening or an apocalypse? Dr. Chet Snow is next on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Chet Snow, Ph.D., internationally acclaimed author, lecturer, regression therapist with degrees from Columbia University and Sorbonne in Paris, is the former president of the Association for Past Life Research and Therapies, which is a group of about 1,000 therapists worldwide. He also edits the annual Mass Dreams newsletter, updating his future predictions. And since Feb of 1998, he and his wife, Calista, have organized and hosted several international conferences in Sedona, and since November 2002, they organized America's annual Crop Circle Conference, Signs of Destiny, in Phoenix. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hey, Chet, how are you?
Well, good evening, George. It's great to talk to you tonight.
My pleasure. I understand you know our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, as well. You've done some conferences with her.
Yes, and Linda's been a really close and good friend for many years. When she used to live back in Philadelphia, that's kind of my home stomping grounds. My wife and I used to actually go visit my stepmother there and sometimes would have the opportunity to go over and spend an evening or two with Linda in her home, and that was a really quality time. So, her work is really top drawer, and the earthfiles.com is a wonderful website. And, of course, we do see her sometimes in England for the crop circles in the summertime.
You were on once with Art. Gosh, how long ago was that?
I don't remember precisely, but it's been at least 10 years. And we had a couple of conversations. I think I was on two or three times back in that period in the mid-1990s.
And you haven't been on since. So this is a first for both of us.
It is. And I've been doing many other things, just sort of lots of personal things going on in my life. And I've been now married for 15 years this December. It's hard to believe, but that's also a very important factor. I haven't really written any more books in that time, but I've been doing magazine articles and my newsletter, as you mentioned. And of course, my wife and I organize various events, and we do take people to sacred sites across Europe and sometimes in the United States. In fact, we're going to Hawaii later in October this year.
Well, it is a lot of it's a lot of work to write a book, and you wrote Mass Dreams of the Future nearly 20 years ago, and it's still a strong book. It's still a book that makes you really wonder, Chet, about the direction that we are going to take, and I'm still not sure which way we're going to go. How about you?
I'm not sure anybody will ever be sure, because one thing that I have learned about the future is that in living it, and actually even in predicting it, you alter it. You have an effect on it. That is the unique characteristic of the human mind. And one thing I suppose is a kind of a constant in my life for the last 25 years, maybe even longer, but certainly consciously for the last 25 years, is I would say that I've been a student of the human mind. As you know, I also do regression therapy here in Sedona and also in France. And for a number of years, I worked with Dr. Helen Wambach, who was a well-known author and regression therapist and a person who had done a lot of research into the concept of reincarnation. But it really all comes back to the fact that the human mind has a very unique part in not only living the future consciously, but also by what we think we influence what happens. And that is quite an interesting aspect of all types of prediction and prophecy. You know, there is a statement, of course, that the best prophet is the one whose predictions didn't come true, because, in fact, he made those predictions, and then by getting the word out to people, he altered what took place.
Well, that's a very good thought. You know, there's so many things I want to talk with you about tonight, Chet, because you've touched on a lot of different things, including, of course, the ancient crystal skulls, other Earth mysteries, and as I mentioned, the crop formations. What's the passion for you today? What are you really devoting most of your work to right now?
Well, two things, really. One is that the crop circles still play a very important role. I do think that personally we're in touch with one of the seminal mysteries and communication possibilities that can be thought of as interdimensional, that's happening in our lifetime, that has a physical result that can be, touched, measured. There are energy results, both magnetic, electric, and what I would call consciousness bending. By going into crop circles, if you are at all sensitive, you do feel certain things in certain ones. And then the other passion, I suppose, that I would have is bringing people together that I think are cutting-edge thinkers, people who have something to say, have a message, who not only have the intellect but also the heart to get a message out to people, and hopefully it's one that will lead us into some cooperation rather than just competition in the world. Competition is a healthy thing, but we really are short on cooperation these days. So those are the two things that my wife and I have really been trying to build in the last, let's say, 8 or 9, 10 years now. We do our research into the crop circles every summer. We take people to go and experience the crop circles. I lecture on the crop circles out in the West, mainly Arizona, California. We have the crop circle part of our conference that's every November, so people can actually see the latest circles. They can hear the experts talk about them, and not only from England, by the way, but also from the United States, Holland. There have been crop circles in Germany and Italy this year that have been quite significant. Other parts of the world, South Africa, Russia. So it's a real global phenomenon. And then, as I say, the other thing is I really feel that we're in a time that people need to come together. And I am perhaps a little bit of a Luddite. I'm not entirely into this electronic age as many people are. But I think people, when they come together physically and they sit in a room and they talk with each other and they not only listen to what is being said to them, but they interact with the speaker and with each other, that they then begin, each one, to develop, a new mindset, a way of changing thinking and a way of changing what they take back to their communities. It's like seeding out into the world. So those are the things that have been most prominent in our lives recently.
Well, since you brought up crop formations and circles, let's talk a little bit about that, Chet. Of course, as you know, Linda Moulton Howe has investigated them for a very long time, believes that they are very strange, either dimensional or extraterrestrial. But she's much more of a believer than the hoax and fraud theories, of course. As I have always told her, I said, Linda, even if one is real, it's a heck of a story. But she tends to believe that it's way higher than that. What about you? Do you think these crop formations are primarily made by extraterrestrial forces? And to me, that definition is everything except a human being.
Okay, I would say anomalous rather than extraterrestrial, just for the simple concept that I think we're dealing with intelligence, and that intelligence is probably has as much to do with the Earth and knowledge of the Earth and maybe even rooted in the Earth as we human beings are. There's a lot of schools of thought, as I'm sure you're aware of, and I'm sure you've had guests discuss it, that, you know, human life also, in fact, probably all DNA came from space somehow to this planet originally. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Extraterrestrial perhaps implies something out there other than what's here on the Earth. I think crop circles are very closely connected to the Earth. I also think that they're interdimensional in nature, and they're an incredible force because somehow we're being tapped into by an intelligence, clearly they're intelligent, who can create a physical result here on the planet. And that's very unusual. Even most paranormal, parapsychological work, getting physical results, even like ghosts that, you know, feel cold or a poltergeist who can move some small object, is very rare. And yet here, year after year, not in just one place, but in over 30 countries around the world, and probably, I think this year there were 16 or 17 countries that reported crop circles just in the growing season of the Northern Hemisphere. It's repeatable. It keeps going on. And it's tangible for people. And you can get in touch with it if you want to. That's all kind of exciting to me.
Well, these formations, if they're interdimensional, are they messages for us, or are they merely some entity that's creating artwork? What do you think they are?
Well, I don't think they're graffiti. I mean, I know there's a school that says that. I don't think they're graffiti. And the reason I don't say extraterrestrial particularly is because I really feel that they're very intimately connected, not only with the Earth, but with human beings, with our culture. There seems to be a great knowledge of who we are. There are too many reports to discuss of people who have gotten together in small groups, or even two or three individuals that have sent concentrated, you know, a thought in a positive way, asking for certain designs or asking for certain crop circles, and those crop circles appear, or something very similar appears in a short period of time. Not just, oh, well, anybody can ask for a triangle, and of course, eventually a triangle will show up. It's not like that. They ask for fairly complex designs. I actually did such an experiment myself 10 years ago right here in Sedona with a group from the Edgar Cayce ARE group that right. We had a study group, and we met, and we spent an afternoon coming and thinking of elements that we wanted in the crop circles. And this was a group of fairly experienced meditators, and we had no, you know, interest in this other than it was something that we were trying to see as an experiment. And it was in April, so I thought, well, I told them at the end of the seminar, you know, in a month or two, maybe we'll get a crop circle that will look like what we have done. And I think we had five elements in the crop circle, including a star and a crescent and a couple of other things. And would you believe it, 24 hours later, the first crop circle of that year occurred in England, and four of the five elements that we had talked about and discussed and drawn were in that crop circle. So that starts to make a believer out of you that this is connected to us somehow, you see. So I don't know if it's a message, like we want to think with our rational left brain about this.
Yes, we want to think they're telling us something.
Yeah,
it's a prediction.
It's like that.
Okay,
it's a teaching, and I think we're being influenced by very, very patient and very, very wise, ultimately beneficent teachers is how I would see it, and part of the teaching is to learn to pay attention. That's maybe the first thing you have to learn when you go to school. Oh, hey, there's somebody there that has something to say to me or something to teach me, or even in the drawing or whatever I'm going to be doing physically in the class. There's a purpose, there's a discipline and attention. So they keep very gently nudging our attention in certain directions. It's amazing to me, and I'm no great mathematician or you know, astro scientist, but that the crop circles, as they have developed in the last 25 years across England, have gone really from very simple designs that are sort of like ABC to now depictions in three-dimensional art of wormholes, of the possibilities of equations for time travel, even future predictions maybe being written into certain of them. They've connected up with the Mayan calendar system, which we know is a hot topic these days as we're coming in this countdown toward 2011 or 2012, depending on who you want to listen to. But in any case, something that's a changeover point, as well as showing us, how can I say it, a model, I guess I would say, of possible human cooperation, of getting together and going out into nature and experiencing something in a group, a small group, hopefully. That works the best with 10 or 12 people. And then you come back and you tell people about that, and that sets up a chain of events so that the life around you isn't the same. That's what I see starting to happen in the crop circles, and hopefully now in other parts of our lives as well.
So you're beginning to see, since these things were appearing, of course, they've been appearing for a long time, but in terms of, you know, mass records of these, you're seeing an evolution of what could be a change of knowledge, maybe an education?
Of consciousness.
Of consciousness.
It's education of consciousness is the way I see it. It's, again, very patient. They have a whole different time frame than we do. We'd like to have everything, you know, solved yesterday. I'm not sure that even in our lifetime it will necessarily be solved, although they do seem to be connected to this countdown of the Mayan calendar. So there may be something to the fact that they're pushing us a little bit harder in recent years, simply because as we reach the 2012 point, changeover, turnover, it's not the end of things necessarily, but it's probably a beginning. But it really is a lesson in consciousness raising. Ultimately,
right, now,
that's what I see in it.
Why do you believe, Chet, that there's the possible tie into the Mayan calendar? What evidence or what have we seen with these formations?
Well, there have been a number in recent years that have been pretty blatant, that have shown numerologically and geometrically aspects of the Mayan calendar. There was even one this year, my gosh, you couldn't get any more blatant than that. It was literally the Mayan symbol for six, I believe. Just a very simple bar and a circle in such a way that, you could turn it upside down, because obviously in a circle you can look at it from any direction. But if you look at it from one direction, it was a bar with a circle above it, which is exactly in the Mayan calendar counting system, the number six. Now, I don't know precisely what that means. Certain people interpreted it different ways. But there have been other much more complex ones that have come in recent years. But even before that, I remember I did a study that I just put in my newsletter a couple of years ago that I went back for, I'm going to say, 12 years into the early 90s. And I looked at the Mayan calendar changeover date, the yearly calendar. It changes over July 26th to July 27th. So I said, well, let's take a fudge factor of a day before, so from the 25th to the 28th of July. Mm-hmm. And I counted the number of crop circles that occurred in any one year. And then I took the same kind of period, you could take it any time, let's say 2 weeks later or even 1 week later, to see what would, and 1 week before. And there was a statistically significant difference. Many more crop circles, statistically significantly, came in the 25, 6, 7, 8 of July than did in, let's say, the 13, 14, 15, 16 of July. I don't remember the dates I used, but it was about like that. Or the, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th of August.
If this is true, then, as we lead up to 2012, we're going to see more and more crop formations, I would assume.
I'm not sure that we'll see more. Actually, they have been, globally, they have been about steady. There's been a slight increase this year. The peak seems to have come about 1999, 2000, actually. But what we're seeing are many more complex ones, and they seem this year particularly were geographically in a much smaller area than they had been in other years, even in England. So I don't know if we're going to get more. I think it's quality rather than quantity, George.
Okay, and why do we seem to see or get reports of lights or orbs in the area?
Well, again, the orbs and the lights in the crop circles are not the same thing, I don't believe. We're dealing with perhaps two aspects of the same phenomenon. That's very possible. Again, it's an interdimensional type of phenomenon. I think that the orbs that people are getting on their digital cameras, and you can get it on standard cameras as well, because I've photographed orbs for years, actually, and sometimes they're actually vortexes of energy that you just can't see with it. I think we're getting more of those, quite frankly, because the Earth's magnetic field is reducing. The difference between the North Pole and the equator and the North Pole and the South Pole, the positive negative, is coming down. And we know that's true scientifically. It's been reported that we're going closer and closer, coming together. So as that happens, it's what one might call the veil between dimensions, because it is electromagnetism that holds the perception of dimensions in place. And as that happens, more these orbs are coming as, I think, in a sense, footprints or fingerprints of another dimension closer to ours. Crop circles may also be more prevalent because of that, but the lights that are associated with crop circles, that like Linda Howe wrote about when she wrote Mysterious Lights in Crop Circles some years ago, that seems to be a different phenomenon. It is a phenomenon that is moved with purpose and with energy, and possibly might even be likened to a blueprint that can somehow stamp itself energetically onto the plants in the field, so that the plants then lay themselves down.
Chet, stay with us. We're going to be back in just a moment as we talk mass dreams of the future. Well, just a few weeks remain for this special offer here that we're giving you. When you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter or renew, you'll get the free CD of the Philadelphia Experiment with Al Bielek and Art Bell interview. And a portion of the proceeds of the After Dark subscription goes directly to Mr. Al Bielek. So call 1-888-727-5505, or you can also go online, coasttocoastam.com. Like I said, this is going to last just a few more weeks, so take advantage of this and help out Mr. Bielek at the same time. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Chet Snow. We've got a wide range of topics with Chet tonight. Later on, we'll take your phone calls. Ancient crystal skulls, Chet. You did some work there back, I think, at least 10 years ago. Have you stayed on top of this thing?
Well, it is a passion of my wife's, even more than mine. Yes, we actually hosted one of the first crystal skull conferences in the United States back in 1998 when we brought together not only the ancient crystal skulls, Max, of course, who's in Houston, Texas, and Shauna Ra with Nick Nocerino, who was sort of the premier investigator into crystal skulls mm-hmm. at that time. He's since gone on to perhaps investigate them on another plane. But he had a wonderful crystal skull named Shauna Ra with Barbara Marciniak, the trans-channel of the Pleiadians, who had never channeled holding a crystal skull. So we had that opportunity. And actually, I believe that at that event that we had some Native American shamans. It was quite a unique thing that took place. And we did two others of those. And actually, my wife, who is French, and I have been helping do similar organization in France in the last few years over in Europe. And so we have helped to take Max and Shauna Ra to France in June of this year, where I think we had 450 people that came and spent a weekend with Flor de Mayo, a Mayan elder and friend of ours who's worked with many of the crystal skulls. And we ourselves were gifted with a crystal skull, which is a contemporary crystal skull from Brazil, in 1999. So it's been something that's been part of our lives. Our little crystal skull, which is a baby-sized crystal skull, frankly, that's much easier to travel with. I'm a very practical guy. That isn't why we happen to have it. Gaia Luz came to us, and she's a pure citrine. And we have seen how the energy, what is unique with crystal skulls is, of course, like all crystals, as Barbara Marciniak and her Pleiadians have said, energy is stored in stone and bone. And so stone, of course, is crystal. Crystal has a unique ability to take energy in and then amplify it and transmit it at a later time. So in a sense, all radio work is based on crystals, isn't it? Think
well,
about
that,
it, Marconi.
That's true.
Everything that is really a crystal. The only thing that is different with the crystal skull, other than the size, is that a crystal skull is shaped in a shape that we have a subconscious connection to as human minds. Come back to the mind, because really, ultimately, everything works through the mind. And we have been subconsciously programmed either through genetics, because of our ancestors, genetic ancestors, worshipped skulls of ancestors back in the ancient times, or through reincarnation. Possibly we had past lives with ancient crystal skulls in other parts of the world, in Lemuria or Atlantis or even in Mesoamerica, Central America. So that the skull shape, even though consciously many people think, oh, that's a terrible symbol of death or something, that's not what our subconscious says to us. Our subconscious says, here is a source of wisdom and oftentimes a source of healing. And that's why they're so effective when used with skilled intuitives, skilled healers who can take the vibration of the healing and entrain it into the crystal skull and through the crystal, you see, into the patient.
Why or are the ancient skulls, they have more power than maybe some of the current ones?
Well, why does Chartres Cathedral resonate and attract more people to go there, and you automatically feel a sense of prayer when you walk in it, than just going to the tabernacle down the street. Primarily, it is because that building was built in such a way that it would amplify those vibrations better. And there have been hundreds of years of people who have created by their being there in that reverent state a vibration that endures. The same is true with ancient crystal skulls. They were fashioned, the really ancient ones, the ones like Max or Shana Ra, were fashioned thousands and thousands of years ago by technologies we don't understand yet even today. I know, I've heard this from Joanne Parks herself, that you could not recreate Max even with the laser technology that we have today. And she's been told that by, you know, people who are specialists in these things. It simply couldn't be done. So that there was a technology that created them in such a way that that shape would amplify and pick up the resonance and put it back out again, transmit it. And then those crystal skulls have been, even though they may have been sleeping for some time, many of them were found, of course, in tombs, so that for the last 1,000 years, maybe they were asleep. But nonetheless, for thousands of years, they were being used by individuals and groups around the world. There's a woman in Holland who's a friend of ours, Yoki is her name, and she has, I think, 7 ancient crystal skulls. I mean, that's, think about
it. How many ancient ones are there, 13?
No, there's more than 13.
Are there? Okay.
According to the true Mayan tradition, as was explained to us by Grandmother Flor de Mayo, there are actually 13 crystal skulls for each of the 4 directions. So you think
really?
About that. That's 52. So there would be 52 that at some point would have been used or together. And so far as I know right now, there's about 20 that one could argue are ancient crystal skulls. It's almost impossible, by the way, to tell what an ancient crystal skull is except by a negative. And by a negative, I mean you can tell that something is not an ancient crystal skull if it has markings on it, such as metal leaves a certain marking. So if a skull has been, you know, polished with a metallic tool,
right,
or if it's been turned on a lathe, or if it's been otherwise used with a machinery, all of those things were not used in the ancient times. It's very possible, and again, I come back to my source from the Mayans, that plant substances were used in the original creation of the crystal skulls, because there are some plants apparently very secretly kept. The secrets of them are closely guarded, so you're not going to find these on the Internet. The secretions of which, if used properly, could shape crystal, melting it into the shape that could be eventually made into a skull.
I was going to say, is it possible they had liquid crystal and they made this mold?
Well, I don't think they're molded. Max, certainly, you could never have been molded, because actually he's formed from 3 different parts of a crystal stem. And the 3 would have had to have been growing together naturally.
Right.
You know, and a confluence point. That's why Max is such a powerful crystal skull, because he has a triple energy. It's like a triple whammy. Anybody who's been in Max's presence knows. And the crystal skulls, by the way, they can be used for negative purposes as well as positive ones, simply by the programming that people put into them. The programming comes from people, not from the crystal. But I'm talking about plants that could be used in a rubbing way or a secretion. Think of, like, you know, many plants secrete a milky substance. That could probably have been taken and then molded around a piece of natural crystal and rubbed in such a way so that in very quick, short period of time, you would get the rounded shape, and then you could sculpt out in the appropriate ways the way the crystal skull would be looked, to make it look like a skull.
Are any of these skulls, Chet, dangerous? I mean, can they be used for the wrong purposes?
Well, as I just said, crystal is not dangerous in and of itself.
By itself. No, I agree. But, I mean, what about the individual?
But it can be used. I would liken a crystal skull to a scalpel. In the hands of a surgeon, it can create miracles. In the hands of Jack the Ripper, it can create horror. So it all comes back to the human and the mind, doesn't it? It comes back to the intention.
Good point.
It really is what people intend to use that crystal skull for. Fortunately, we're very lucky in our day and age the people who, obviously, ancient crystal skulls are priceless. So the people who have them have to have a certain economic base in order to have one. And most of them also have a very high spiritual base as well, which is a really wonderful thing. And as I say, maybe the crystal skull actually calls to it the person or group that will be the caretaker for it and use it in a positive way. I don't know of any that are being used for dark forces or dark energies. I'm not saying that couldn't exist, but I don't know of any today.
Are the modern skulls, the ones that are being manufactured today, do they have any power?
If they're of crystal, and there are some that are made out of glass, there are some that are made out of stone, there's
plastic,
some that are made out of many other substances. I can't speak for those. If they are of the crystal family, the genuine quartz crystal family, which includes amethyst, citrine, ametrine, rose quartz, all the derivatives of an actual quartz, which is, it has to be real quartz, by the way, to work in a radio too, right?
True.
Do you understand what I mean? There's
yep.
a piezoelectric effect that was, I think it was Pierre Curie, came up with the scientific work on that about 150 years ago. Anyway, when you're dealing with pure crystal, real crystal, yes, the modern crystal skulls have the same crystal effect as the ancient ones. There's just two things. One is they haven't had the experience because they haven't been shaped and used so long, as long. And the second thing is that when they are put in contact with the ancient crystal skulls, if they're left in contact for any length of time, they can acquire knowledge. And we've seen that happen even at some of our events that we've done in the past. Most recently, we had a wisdom gathering here in Sedona with Native American elders from as far from Colombia, from Hawaii, from Canada, from Hopi, from eastern United States, from western Oregon, coming with one of the crystal skulls, which is called Synergy, whose owner happens to live right here in Arizona. And there was an amazing recognition of these elders when they were with that crystal skull. It became their baby. It was truly amazing to watch. And there was a radiating energy from that crystal skull into the room. And, you know, this is maybe just synchronicity, George, but you can check this in the newspaper. We had a huge power outage in Sedona that night. Everywhere
that is weird.
In the place where the conference was being held.
Jeez.
And it was noted by a scientist who is doing some work here, and she actually called up the next day and said, well, what were you guys doing? Because she was noting this, looking for outages and connecting them up with paranormal type events. And she'd been doing this around the United States for a few years now. And here she was in Sedona, and she was amazed that that was happening right then. It was right at the time when the elders were up on the stage, and we were doing ceremony with the crystal skull and the elders combined. So you see, it's a human interaction with intention with the crystal.
How did the ancient skulls come into the possession of some of these people? I mean, what happened? Did they buy them? How did they get them?
I think everyone has a story. I can tell you the story of Max in just a minute or two. Joanne Parks, who's a housewife in Texas, and her husband runs a furniture, makes custom furniture. He has a great business doing furniture there.
And she's been on the program before.
Okay, well, then you sort of know her story, that she was helping a Tibetan lama in a healing center. And he was using the crystal skull in his healing center, and her daughter had a terminal cancer.
Yep.
And after her daughter's death, ultimately she volunteered there for some time, and when the lama left his body, he left instructions that it was to be given to her. He'd been told by the skull that she was the one it should go to. Now, did it recognize a quality in her? I don't know, but I do know that she has taken Max up to more places and had more contact with people with Max than the lama did in the healing center.
Oh, yeah, she travels with him. He goes through airports, security checkpoints, everything.
All around the world now. I mean, and not everywhere. She won't take him into any dangerous places, but we've had her in France twice with friends of ours over there. I know she's been to England with him, and I know she travels, almost like 30, 40 weeks out of the year across the United States and Canada. So these are the kind of things that they come out. And then the modern ones, the contemporary ones, they also, as I say, can take on the energy. And if they are working with a positive and a powerful intuitive, a healer, that also can have that event. We take our crystal skull. Her name is Gaia Luz, which means the light of the earth in Portuguese.
And how old is this one?
We were gifted with this in 1999. It was actually, we had our second crystal skull event here in 1999, and Mayan elder Don Alejandro came, and he actually predicted to us, well, you know, in a very short time, you're going to have a crystal skull. And we poo-pooed and said, no, we've got other things to do. And about a month later, it happened, totally to our surprise. Some people buy them. We take our small crystal skull with us to sacred sites around the planet. And
but I mean, how old is this skull?
It's contemporary.
It was
probably crafted in 98 or 99.
Okay.
This was hand done by Brazilian artisans. I personally like the ones that have a hand touch to them because there's a more, energetically, they're more positive than the ones that have just come off of turning on a lathe in China.
If you walked around with it in your pocket, would it give you any special strengths, any special energy?
I think it works with focusing and intention. As you know, I'm a regression therapist, and I do private sessions occasionally. Don't do too many of them anymore, but I still do work with that, and it's important for me to do that work because I think it's a very strong healing modality, the past life regression. I find that Gaia Luz works with the emotions and the emotional body. And sometimes in sessions, when somebody has an intense emotional experience that's very cathartic and very healing, nonetheless, they have to come back into their body. They have to reintegrate their body before they should get up off the couch and leave the office. And Gaia Luz, she can do that in a minute, 2 minutes.
It's amazing.
That's ability that's there. My wife works with her as a medium, sort of intuitively, I guess is the best way. And the same thing. It's as if my wife sometimes says that she brings thoughts into my wife's mind, that she can then say things that she personally wouldn't know consciously. And that's how they work with you. They amplify, you see, your own possibilities and intentions.
Do you think Atlantis existed and that possibly there's a huge crystal somewhere that is right in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle?
I'm not sure that it's in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. I do think that there is a large crystal under the Atlantic Ocean somewhere in the Atlantic Ridge. I've heard that people, you know, that there's been even some stories of sailors, I think there was a Russian particularly at one point that was pretty sure they had found where it was, and then just as the stories with the Bermuda Triangle, you know, as soon as they got out of the influence of where it was, they lost all their notes and all of their reckonings. I'm not sure that those are meant to be found at this point. I don't. It's just like the legend of the 13 crystal skulls coming together, or the 52, if you accept what Grandma Flor de Mayo has to say on that. I'm not sure we're ready for it. All of those legends say that they will only come together when humanity will be able to use the power that would be unleashed in them in a positive and constructive way.
Well, you may be right about that. Check your website, chetsnow.com. And if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. I'll tell you what, when we come back, we'll talk specifically now about his work, Mass Dreams of the Future. Basically asking, do we face an apocalypse or a global spiritual awakening? He says the choice is all ours. Want to get his take on that. And in the last hour of the program tonight, we'll open up the phone lines for you with our special guest tonight, Chet Snow. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.